Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So if you have a question, a comment, or a concern about wills, trusts, probate, powers of attorney, ladybird deeds, gentleman bird deeds, you notice nobody ever worries about that. Right? You never see lady slash gentleman bird deeds. Do you see that? No. No, you don't. So you see he, she all the time, but not lady, gentleman bird. I wonder why not. Discrimination, I guess. Anyway, if you have a question about that kind of stuff, if you're wondering what is this elder law all about, how do I pay for the high cost of long-term care, how do we keep our business going, how do we get our house sold? You know, I got to tell you, the real estate thing, it's going crazy out there again. You know, I mean, I think we've definitely bounced off the bottom, at least in the sense of supply, because there is no supply. If you talk to anybody who's listed a home recently, if it lasted a week, it's amazing, you know, or it's a dump, one or the other, because the big problem that I'm hearing now from the folks that we work with and from the agents and whatnot, they can't get inventory. And you put something up, and then boom, it's gone like that. Now that doesn't mean that everything's all hunky dory, but you know it's been going on so long with the extremely low interest rates, and you know, nobody's willing to loan money. So we got low interest rates, you know, restrictive practices, loaning practices, borrowing practices, instead of the loose ones that we used to have. And what that means is that nobody's been building houses now for, you know, and I exaggerate, of course, but, you know, the house building has been way down, okay, and yet people still keep getting born and stuff, and the demand is up. And, we're not building enough to keep up even with the minor expansion in demand that there has been. And so, a consequence, and you had a lot of investors soaking up these houses. You know, when the housing prices crashed, and now we're looking at it, I believe, we're looking at it in the rearview mirror at this point. You know, we're past that crash period, and we've been past it for at least a year or two. You know, people got in there, and I don't know if it was 70% of transactions were cash transactions because it was people who had money were investing in these properties, okay? Well, they're not about to turn them loose anytime soon. They don't have the motivation. If you bought it really cheap, you do not have the motivation to sell the thing as if you were living it and you were moving on. Are you with me on that? So it was these investors who soaked up the houses when the thing crashed. And I think it's fair to say we're that's past us now. We're past that phase. Probably been past it for a year. And those people have no desire to sell. And so the only, you know, it's soaked up. I'm just saying, it soaked up a lot of excess capacity. And at this point, the only way you get a place is because somebody's moving somewhere. Okay? I mean, they're not building hardly at all. And that's why the market is so tight. And as a consequence of that, the prices are getting bid back up again. And it's really tough. If you're looking to buy a place, good luck, because there's very not much out there. A consequence of that is if you're looking to sell, right, or you've been underwater for a while, I mean, the chances are that your values have come up again. Maybe not high enough to, you know, to float it, right? Hopefully, it's possible that you're not, say hopefully, it's possible that you're not back to scratch again, you know, not back to where you started, okay? But it's not as bad as it used to be. So if you're looking to buy or sell a home, give us a shout, 888-463-2843. That's 888-GO-DAVID, and we'll get you on the air. But let's see, other housekeeping items. The Life Plan Workshops, of course, we're still doing these every week. The Good Lord Brings and Twice on Holidays, so if you want to sign up for a Life Plan Workshop, easy to do it. Just get on over to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. We still have a few seats. We're doing a double workshop, of course, for St. Patrick's Day. That's coming. Hey, hard to believe, isn't it? Well, all the snow all around it. So, yeah, we're planning the St. Patrick's Day workshop. Okie doke. Well, if you'd like to come to that, we still have a few seats. Still have a few seats available for the St. Patrick's Day workshop. Other items of interest, for those of you who are over in the Holland area We did close the lease on the Holland office, so we will be over at the Adams Point office building over there. That's going to be happening as soon as we get our as soon as we get the furniture over and the computers warmed up and all that kind of stuff. So you won't have to be making that long trek. Not that we don't appreciate it, we really do. But for all our Holland clients, you know, we'll be having office hours in your neck of the woods. Also, speaking of necks of woods, that's pretty far neck of the woods. Anyway, got a call from Afghanistan this past week, and if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see there's a picture there of Kevin, my son Kevin, First Lieutenant Airborne Ranger Kevin Carrier, receiving the Bronze Star. They just had their award ceremony, and you can even see he's still got a cast on his wrist from they were doing some sort of exercise at the range, and he was going down, somebody else was coming up, and the end result was a broken wrist for and sprained ankle for Kevin. But he showed up for the he was there for the award ceremony. Also, he'll be back next month, so thank you all very much for everybody who's been sending the good wishes and the prayers and all the rest of it. I pass those on to him. He really, really does appreciate it. You know, everybody, you know, it's a really important thing, I think. And anyway, he does appreciate it. We've got Pat on the line. Good morning, Pat. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Hi, David.
How can I help?
Just a question about law and defamation of character and how that works.
Okay.
So if you have a spectator at a high school athletic event,
right,
and a referee ejects the spectator and tells the officials and the coaches and the other people there that the person threatened them from the stands but will not give any further explanation, just other than that they personally threatened them, but then the spectator who's ejected, it's a wrong. It's not true.
Oh, okay.
Because it's on video, because everybody videotapes everything nowadays.
Right, 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 sure.
Everybody around that.
From which angle? Which of the five videos are you going to rely on, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if it is the case where nothing was said and the referee, frankly, was wrong, totally wrong, and they ejected a person that hadn't said anything on that, but then they're telling the referees then telling other people that the person threatened him personally from the stands.
Mm-hmm.
Is he defaming that person's character? Is there?
Well, there's two actions. There's two actions. There's libel and slander. Libel is when you write it down. Slander is when you say it. Okay. So we're talking about slander here. Okay, because he isn't writing down and passing out a pamphlet to everybody saying, so-and-so threatened me with a machine gun from the stands,
right,
or whatever.
He's just saying it.
And truth is a defense to a charge of slander. And for slander per se, see, generally you have to prove damages. Okay, so if it's like, okay, you slandered me and ejected me from the game, I'm a scout for a team, and now I can't, now no one will let me in their stadium because I'm a threatening, and you just destroyed my livelihood. Well, okay, great. Now I have damages. Now you have actual damages. Or if, you were selling.
That'd be monetary?
Monetary damages, right. Not just psychic stuff. Then you get into what they call slander per se or libel per se, and that is when you accuse someone of a crime. Okay, no matter what someone's character is, if you accuse them of a crime, and you, usually the sort of defense is, well, he didn't have any character to destroy anyway. He's been threatening people for years. Everybody knows it, and everybody hates him anyway. They couldn't hate him anymore because of this. Do you see what I mean? If you don't have a, all right, but if you have, so there's no slander because I didn't damage your character. And then you get the idea of slander per se or libel per se, where you accuse somebody of a crime or an infamous deed or something like that. And then you don't have to show damages in order to go ahead, with your case. But they might give you a dollar. Okay. Yeah, you proved it. But,
right.
You weren't, here's a dollar. Hope you feel better. You know, that's the kind of that's the sort of thing you get into. Then, you know, you wade pretty deep into the swamp when you go into this stuff because, you know, in America, we want people to talk. We'd rather have people be talking than not talking. In other places, for example, France or England, you know, other places, other countries, they're more concerned about, you know, better to keep your mouth shut than the slander of the aristocracy kind of thing, you know. And so there's a lot more, there are a lot more protections for libel and slander. Excuse me, there's a lot more causes of action. There's a lot more protection of quote-unquote reputation that way. You don't get to talk as much as you want to. And but here, if you're a we got the music coming. I tell you what, Pat, if you want to hang on, we'll get right back to you. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
I'll be a different kind of bad bug from all the rest. I ain't biting no ordinary people. You have to be quite social and respectable, such as female doc.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show, the place where we celebrate the early coming of summer with our calypso music. That's, you know. And we don't mean Kokomo, Indiana, do we? No. Can we do the Pina Colada song next? All righty. Excellent. Yeah, celebrating the warm weather and the untimely arrival of high summer in... okay, maybe not. Anyway, we've got Pat on the line. And Pat was a... Well, he's gone. But that's okay. He was at a basketball game where the ref threw somebody out for allegedly making threatening comments. And the question is, can we sue the guy? And the answer is, maybe. I mean, that's a libel, right? It's not. It's defamation. Defamation is libel, which is somebody said something, and, excuse me, slander, where somebody said something, transitory, and then libel, where it's written down somewhere, or it could be video or something like that. You know, you could make a video saying... you know, the defamatory comments. And defamation amounts to, let's get it right here, attacks on a person's professional character or standing. Okay? Slanderous in that case, I guess. Allegations that a person is infected with a sexually transmitted disease... that's the movie of the week. And allegations that a person has committed a crime of moral turpitude. And I guess, you know, I guess threatening a ref would be a crime of moral turpitude. Now, if you're accused of defamation, number one, you can argue that it's true. What Pat has told us is that there's multiple, at least one, videotape demonstrating that it isn't true. Okay? Now, a defense, so that's one defense, it's true. It's an absolute defense. If it is true, then you don't get to complain about it. And here we're saying, well, factually, it's not true. I didn't say that. But another defense is privilege. Okay? So if a witness, you know, is up in the stand, whole truth, nothing but truth, well, then they have a, you know, they have a right to say it. Okay? That's a privilege. Also, if attorneys in court make statements, legislators on the floor of the House, you know, so if they go there and they, you know, say stuff, judges, okay, those are privileged. They could be false, they could be outrageous, they could be terrible. Still, they're privileged. You get to say them because the idea is that freedom to speak your mind in court or in the legislature, that's a really important thing. Now, if you're a ref, you know, trying to keep a game under control or something, and you hear a threat and you think it's this guy, and you throw him out, you could be wrong. Okay, you might be wrong. Apparently, he is wrong. It wasn't this guy. And you know, obviously, that's terrible for the guy. But does the ref have a privilege? You know, it's not a statutory privilege, but does the ref have a privilege to say, "Hey, throw that guy out"? You know, he's got to say something. You can't say, "Well, I'm throwing that guy out just because I get to throw out whoever I choose." You can't say that. So you got to give the reason, and that's part of his duty, is to give the reason to the referee, you know, to the timekeeper, whoever it was, You know, he's got to say why he was doing it. So I'm a little bit concerned then in a situation like this where you've got somebody who's acting within the scope of his authority. In other words, the ref does have the authority to throw people out who are making threatening statements. The fact that he got it wrong is not defamatory. He got it wrong. I mean, people get to be wrong. Now, if it's your enemy from the sandbox, you know, from grade school or whatever, right? And every time you show up at a basketball game, he throws you out for threatening him. Well, that's a different story, obviously. Okay, and then we've got actual malice, and you know, you got a whole bunch of other stuff going on there. But I don't think that I really don't think that we've got much of an action for defamation there, unless, as I say, unless you can prove that it was maliciously, you know, not just false, but with, if you can show actual knowledge of the falseness, so much the better. A gross negligence. Well, you know, everybody's screaming stuff, and you think it's that guy. Well, you know, wasn't there a tape of some hockey players going after some poor sap? There was one guy who was actually doing it, it seems to me. But then there was another one where he made a mistake. I think it was a basketball where he actually went after the guy. It was a basketball game where the pro player went after the guy who was actually ragging on him. But then it seems to me there was a hockey game where the hockey player went into the stands and got the wrong guy. Well, you know, those things are loud, you know, and people get excited. And, you know, and if a ref throws you out because the guy next to you was actually making the threats and, you know, you're innocent, well, you probably don't have much of a cause of action there. You probably don't. Although an apology from the ref demonstrating, you know, all the rest, you know, demonstrating, hey, it wasn't me, you know, it wasn't me. Then I think I think that would be appropriate, but I don't think you have a cause of action for it. Okie doke. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Let's get to one of our emails. Just got the high sign. I'm going to get out of here pretty quick. But how do I get someone off my property that has not signed any lease of any kind but has been living there and storing belongings? There was a now at first you read that and you think, oh, squatter. Then you read, there was a verbal agreement they could store some of their belongings for a short period of time. Okay, but never anything about, quote, living on the property. The couple has taken over an old camper trailer belonging to me, used it as a residence since December 1st. No running water, heat, toilet facilities, etc., though they've been using electricity by extension cords being run from one of my buildings in order to use electric heaters and lights in the camper. I cannot seem to get any response from them in regards to their intentions or monies for use of the property for storage. You need help. You're darn right. Well, here's help. Number one, hit them with a notice to quit, 30-day notice to quit. And, you know, if there's nothing, you know, at this point, there's no facilities. There's no nothing there, right? And they're stringing electric lights. I'm not so sure the sheriff wouldn't, or the local cops wouldn't be willing to, escort them off the property simply because it's not safe. There's got to be a housing code violation, I would guess. But in any event, what you need to do is, number one, hit them with the notice to quit, the 30-day notice to quit, and, you know, just take them to court and get them evicted. That's what you just need to go through those steps. You can't just unplug the electricity and freeze them out. You can't, I don't think you can. I wouldn't advise it. And you can't just move their stuff out. Definitely can't do that. But, you know, go through the motions. And I would alert the sheriff. I would call the sheriff and say, hey, look, I rented them a storage area, and then they moved into it. And then they strung, you know. And where are they going to the bathroom anyway? I mean, what, in the trees, in the woods, what? I think the two tracks. Number one, call the sheriff to they're trespassing. You know, they're living in a storage area. They're not supposed to do that. And the second is start right away on the eviction process, because it is not at all unlikely that the law enforcement will decline to get involved. They say, oh, it's a civil matter. We don't get involved in those. And then you'll be happy you gave them the notice to quit. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Watching the news when this fella came on TV. I'm in the coconut, you call the doctor, woke him up, say, doctor. Welcome back to The David Carrier Show. That's what you call a doctor. You woke him up and you said, hey, 7 to 9, Sunday mornings. It's The David Carrier Show. Anyway, give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888 888- GoDavid, and you can sign in. You can ask us a question. Ask me a question. It's not us. Anyway, ask me a question about wills, trusts, probate, defamation of character. We don't care. You know, if it's legal stuff, we'll deal with it. I want to remind you that we deal with all kinds of legal stuff on Carrier's Law. That's right. It's a new segment on Fox 17, 6:30s, sometime after 6:30. Okay? If you want to catch it, you got to watch, you got to watch from 6:30 to 7 on the evening news on Channel 17. So on the Fox affiliate. And, you know, we'll be dealing with going a little bit further afield, you know, a little more than the straight-up elder law estate planning. We're dealing with Second Amendment rights and may get into the whole gun trust thing. That's something I did want to bring up, the whole gun trusts. We've got a lot more demand for these, and we're starting to do more and more of them. This is where folks have firearms, okay, and you want to pass those on to your kids or to other people. Now, there is a way to do that. And you got to be very. It's one of those. It's sort of like the Medicaid in that what you have to do is not immediately obvious, okay? And you have to do it correctly. And if you don't do it correctly, you're going to get squished. But if you do it correctly, then things work out very well. And so if you have got a question about that, give us a call. Why don't you 888-463-2843. And, you know, we'll get you on the air there. Also, don't forget the Life Plan Workshops. Life Plan Workshops every single week and twice on holidays. The next holiday one is the St. Patrick's Day Workshop. That's coming up on the 15th of March. And for you folks in Holland, yes, we did close on the office in Holland and, over there at Adams Point. And we'll be, starting to have office hours there. Certainly by mid-March, probably before then, but certainly by mid-March. Okie doke. Any questions, give us a call, 888-463-2843. Could we make it easier? If we could, we'll try. Let's see. We're just reviewing my emails. You got to love the one where they, I love this one, where they rented out an old trailer. And to store some stuff for a short. See, now here's the thing. This is what I didn't want to get back to this. This is the one where there's no lease, and now someone's squatting on the property, but they have your permission, and it says there's a verbal agreement they could store some of their belongings. What does that mean? Some of their belongings? Nobody knows what that means. For a short period of time. What does a short period of time mean? Okay. And now you're saying. Right? But there was never anything about living on the property, quote unquote. All right? They took over an old camper trailer. What, were they going to store their stuff in the old camper trailer, or is there a pole barn, or what? You know, you just got to, and when did this happen? And as soon as it happened, when, you know, since December 1st, it says. Well, why don't you call the cops on December 2nd, you know, once you found out about it? No running water, no heat, toilet facility, et cetera, et cetera. Although they've been running electricity by extension cords. Holy cats. So, the point is that I don't care how simple it seems to be, right, how simple it may be. You don't always need a lawyer, but it's always a good idea to write stuff down. You know, write it down. Write it down. What does that hurt? And then they sign to say, oh, okay, I'm going to store 3 boxes in the camper for the next 6 months, for up to 6 months. And if I don't take them out, you can have them. Something like that, anything like that. You know, it doesn't have to be all the whys, wherefores, there, here and afters and, you know, furbelows and all the rest of this nonsense. You know, it can be very, very simple because now you, and then you've got something to go ahead with. But when it's a verbal agreement, you know, verbal agreements worth the paper they're written on. Got to say it. Let's get to another easy. I found a deceased great-grandma and great-uncle on the U.S. unclaimed property site. Can I apply for their unclaimed property? I could probably, well, that's good. I could probably provide the death certificates or some form of relative match. Well, here's the thing. You may be entitled, or you may not be, to the property. It depends on who the next of kin are. Okay, so it's a great-grandmother. Well, you know, there was a grandmother in between and a mother. Did they have any siblings? You know, when you're looking at next of kin, you first look, is there a spouse? No spouse. Are there kids? No kids. Are there parents? No parents. Are there brothers and sisters? No brothers and sisters. Okay, fine. Go back up a generation. Is a grandmother? Did the grandmother have, you know, all the stuff? See, that's how you've got to do it. Now, it could be with the unclaimed property. It could be that you are the only surviving relative. That could very well be. But it might not be either. And if it isn't, then, you know, you can't just get the property all for yourself. Okay? This is a good one. I wonder, you know, this is a good one. It's like, well, maybe, I think it's a good one. Maybe you got something else. Maybe you think it's something else. But anyway, here's, do all title companies require agreement of beneficiaries to transfer real property title from a trust? After the death of the person who set up the trust, the grantor, successor trustee entered into an agreement to sell the real property to an arm's length buyer, third party, right? But the title company would not insure the sale unless, or it says, if all the beneficiaries didn't also agree to the sale. You know, so if we don't get all the beneficiaries to sign off, the title insurance company won't insure the deed. Is this typical these days? Well, I would say that it is not typical for a title company. You don't usually see title companies doing that. What you do see now, much more than you ever did, is title companies putting all kinds of restrictions, all kinds of, you know, they want all kinds of additional assurance before they'll issue the policy. Now, you got to understand, title insurance is not like car insurance, okay? If you issue car insurance, you're expecting for there to be claims, right? I mean, that's why people have auto insurance. Because why? Because sooner or later, something's going to smash into you. You're going to smash into somebody, you know. And so a title insurance company, an automobile insurance company or life insurance company, people are going to die eventually, okay, health insurance, it happens. People get sick. You're going to be paying money out on claims, right? I mean, that's part of that's at least half of your business is who to pay the claims to and how much to pay and all that kind of thing. Very, very different with title insurance. Many title insurance companies don't even have a claim form. Can you believe that? They don't even have a form for you to make a claim. You know why? Because they don't get claims. You know why? Because they write the policies so they don't get claims. The purpose of a title insurance company, unlike an automobile insurance company, is they don't expect to get claims. What they do primarily is certify the record of title. And they say, look, we researched the title. Here's what we found. Okay? And it all looks good to us. And if there's anything back there that we didn't find out or we didn't know about or on and on and on, it is not our fault. Whenever and whenever they have to pay a claim, you know what the title insurance companies do? They rewrite the policy. So it's like, oh, they got us on that one. Well, not anymore. Okay, and they rewrite it so that, and you get a long list of exceptions and all the rest. That's the difference between title insurance and regular insurance. Title insurance company just certifying the title to you, and they don't expect to have to pay claims. I'm going to get back to the agreement of the beneficiaries when we get back, but that's the big difference, okay, between a title insurance company and a automobile or health or life insurance. They really don't expect to be paying the claims, and if they've done it right, they won't have to pay the claims because all they're doing is they're saying, look, we researched the records. We didn't go out and look at the property. And we didn't measure the fences, and we didn't do all those things. All we did was research the title, the recorded title. And the recorded title is good. You know, there's a chain of title here. Or here are the things you've got to do to correct the chain of title. That's what a title company does, title insurance company. It's not really insurance in the typical, in the usual sense of the term, because they eliminate the risk because they limit what they're insuring. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. I'm busy 24 hours a day. I fix broken hearts, I know I really care. Girl's name is Sonora. I tell your friends I adore her. And when she dances, oh brother, she's a hurricane in all kinds of weather. Welcome back to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and we are shaking at Sonora all over the place. Well, you don't want to see that. Well, and it's radio, so you don't have to. There you go. Anyway, give us a call. Why don't you? 888-463-2843. Got a few minutes left. If you want to, if you want to get your pina colada over here at the, you know, anybody who calls in, we will send you a pina colada by telephone. It's a little bit different than the usual pina colada, but anyway, you can have it. We do need proof of insurance. Anyway, we're talking about title companies requiring the beneficiaries to sign off before they'll insure title on a transfer from a trust. That's unusual, but you know, title companies are so shell-shocked these days. I mean, everybody dealing with real estate transactions. A lot of title companies gone out of business, you know, because the downturn. They're just being very, very cautious and everything else. And is it possible for a title company to require that as a condition of the insurance? I suppose it is. You know, I don't think they have any. It's a contract. You know, there's no legal obligation on the part of the title company to issue a title, and they can say, oh, we're not giving it to you unless all these people sign off. Well, okay, they could do that. But still pretty unusual because that's not what they're, you know, they're going kind of above and beyond, actually, by requiring that. Now, I will say that whenever we make a distribution from a trust, whenever we're doing a trust administration, my rule is to the trustee is you never give but you get. All right. So you never make a trust distribution unless you get everybody signing off. And we don't make any distribution until everybody signs off and signs off on everything that's been done up to date. So, you know, if you're going to complain about the inventory, now is the time to complain. If you're going to complain about the accounting, now is the time to complain. If you're going to complain about the amount of the distribution or the way it was done or the timing or the handling, if you're going to complain about anything, complain now. All right. And if you're not going to complain now, shut up. Here's your money. Go away. You know what I mean? I mean that's, so it is something, I mean, that which is why I kind of like that thing. We will always do that, but it is kind of unusual to see a title company doing it. We've got Ruth on the line. Good morning, Ruth. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Thank you.
How can I help?
You're always talking about people going into a home and being on Medicaid.
Correct,
and,
yes.
Have a problem where my father is looking at making the decision mm-hmm. to go into a home, but the home is in joint name with my brother and other property in joint with me, and all assets are, you know, some CDs that are all joint.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, how does that happen if you want to go into a nursing home? Are you just, you know, I just pay the bill and that's it? Or
now, Ruth, I can tell you're a faithful listener, right?
Yes.
All right. So what do I also always say? I always say there's always something you can do.
Okay?
You're never without hope. There's always, you know, there's always every point in our life, we're always confronted with the choice between better and worse. Okay? There's always better and worse.
Okay.
The worst is what most people do, and it's I don't know, it's a huge percentage. I'd say 98% of folks just kind of throw up their hands, oh, there's nothing I can do, and they walk right off the cliff. Now, in your situation, we've got some financial assets, it sounds like. We've got some real estate assets. And part of it's the house, and then part of it's some other property. Am I hearing that right?
Yes.
Okay. So what we do with the real estate is different than what we do with the financial assets. And let's look at the real estate first. How long have you and your brother been on the deeds, quote-unquote, on the deeds?
7 years.
Okay. So there's a 60-month look-back, 5-year look-back. Okay, so we don't have a divestment problem. We don't have a problem with your dad having put you and your brother on the deeds, whatever that means, which we don't know yet. So now that doesn't mean that he can have the property, such as, see, here's the deal. Let's say he made you, are you on the house or is it your brother on the house?
My brother.
Okay, so the house, the homestead, we're not worried about. You can keep that. Okay, we are worried about a number of other things, but for immediate first crack at it, eligibility, we're not worried about that. We are worried about the other real estate. Now, it used to be that if, and let's say Dad put you on so that If he dies, it's your property, joint tenants with rights of survivorship. Do you know if he did that?
Yes.
Okay. So it used to be, and let's say the property's worth $100,000, and let's say you're the only one on it. It used to be that in order for your dad to sell the property, you would have to agree to the sale. Okay, otherwise he can't sell it. And the rule used to be if you refuse to sell it, then they won't count it. That's different nowadays. Like I say, that used to be the rule, common sense rule. But nowadays it says if there are multiple owners who refuse to sell and you can't sell because the other owners refuse to sell, we don't care, right? As far as they're concerned, your dad has $100,000, it's the equivalent of having $100,000 in the bank, or $50,000, excuse me, $100,000 property, two joint owners, your dad's got $50,000. And it's like, it's insane because, hey, wait a second, he doesn't have $50,000, he has a joint interest in this piece of real estate, which there's no legal, get this, this is how it is, there's no legal remedy, there's nothing he can do to force the sale of that property. There's nothing anybody can do to force the sale. You don't have to sell it. Are you with me on this? All right? He can't get the money. He can't borrow against it. He can't force the sale. There's no legal remedy. And yet, for Medicaid purposes, he's viewed as having $50,000 of ownership in that property. Okay? All right. So there's a way for us to deal with that. That's got to be dealt with. And then the third thing is the financial assets. That's different. With the real estate, the fact that it was done umpty-ump years ago means that you own it and don't have to give it back, okay? They can't count your ownership of that piece of property. They can't count your brother's ownership in the homestead. They can't count it, all right? So because it was done that long ago. Are we together on that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, it's very different with the money. With the money, even though you've been joint on it for a gazillion years, doesn't matter. Does not matter. Nothing runs. There's no divestment until you actually take the money out and spend it on yourself. And you're not doing that. I mean, it's just that you're just on there to pay dad's bills and stuff like that, right?
Right.
Yeah. So there's no. I'm just guessing because that's the way it usually goes.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well. Then there's no divestment. There's no time has elapsed on the financial assets. And there's other stuff we've got to do there. Here's the deal with where we've got the single person, you know, single surviving parent. You've got basically three options. Number one, save nothing. Most people do that. The second is we can save about half. And then the third is we can save more than half. And what I'd encourage you to do is just give us a call. You know, come on in. We don't, you know, there's no charge obligation, et cetera, et cetera. Just come on in and we'll, you know, have one of the case managers just sort of review where we're at on things and give you some suggestions. But the answer is don't give up. There are things that can be done, things that should be done in order to get your dad qualified. Okie doke?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.